why there's so much addiction and men's mental health on building sites. It's a laddie culture, right? When you walk into a building site, you're tough, you show no fear, you show no emotion.
Mm.
You take the piss out of each other. And then on Friday, you go for beers after work. Saturday morning, 6 a.m., I'm still in my dirty work clothes. I've done 2 grams, drunk 15 pints, can't drive my car home, spoiled the weekend. Because I've overdone it every single time. There's a certain culture around being on a building site that's like, geezer, laddie, beers. Some people can handle it, some people can't.
Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scholfor. We are now into season 6, focusing on mental fitness in Britain's construction industry. A 38-year-old tiler by trade, our guest Chris now focuses his time on podcasting and radio broadcasting. A dedicated family man and committed gym goer, he brings energy, authenticity, and real-life perspective to his work. Having been sober for over 5.5 years, Chris is passionate about personal growth, resilience, and living life with purpose. Through his broadcasting and podcasting, he connects with people through honest conversation, humor, and a down-to-earth approach. In this conversation, we talk about the staggering realization that addiction is stronger than love, using on site at work, and about how being vulnerable around other men is actually the manliest thing you can do. Chris, welcome back to This Is Powerful, my friend.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Thanks for coming back. I know you're on the move, dressed in all your gear, and you're going to, well, you do radio now, don't you?
I do.
And your podcast.
I am.
And this is for the Construction Workers series.
Mate, I've always been a builder, and I always will be at art.
That's why we've asked you back.
Yeah.
So as you're transitioning, before you completely go,
yeah,
we thought we'd get you back on.
Mate, happy to be here. Happy to have a chat about it. It's a big deal. We'll get into it, but I did most of my using at work. I really did. And so many stories, so many instances where I've seen other people struggling around this stuff. It's a big deal. So when you said you was doing this series, I was like, great, needs to be said.
Yeah, it's important. I had a short stint when I was a teenager on building sites. And what I said before, I forgot, but I was working in Leytonstone once. We was doing fireproof ceilings in this block of flats.
Awful.
It was an interesting,
it
was a reawakening for me
yeah.
of how certain things happen. But I crept up to jump the guy I worked with to make him jump in the morning in the van. And as I got up, he was doing something. I looked in the mirror and he had a robe band around his arm. And I saw him inject and I was like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
And
how old are you at this point?
16.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen it. I'd heard of heroin on movies and stuff, but I'd never seen it before. And he was a really nice guy. And then I watched him go downhill and the smell after 2 weeks of working him was really weird. It was like he was like a sticky, sweaty sweat.
Yeah, just like festering.
Yeah, and his colour changed, his attitude changed. And I've never seen anything like it. And I realised at the time that he hadn't used for a long time. And he'd relapsed on the job because he got a lot of money.
Okay.
And he ended up killing himself.
Did he really?
Yeah. But I forgot about that. And I forgot that, God, this is so long ago. We also did a Hilton Hotel near Heathrow Airport with him in this short period of time. And he was staying over there. And I was like, I just want to go home and stay at home. And I come back one day and we're sitting there at breakfast. And he had, for those who can't see, look at the YouTube video, but he was falling asleep at the table, but he wasn't falling asleep, he was awake.
Yeah,
but he's
gouging body, out, they call it.
Yeah, and I was like, what is he doing? And I said to him, mate, you're like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite sad, actually.
Nodding out.
That was my first experience of that.
Mm.
So you've been in the business for a long time, mate.
So, first time I ever walked on a building site was, I was 19, was in Australia. I went to-
That's a long way for a job.
I went to Australia when I was 19, which is what, 19 years ago, I'm 38. Yeah. And a mate of mine was a tiler. I obviously went over there. I've done a few little jobs. I worked at a pizza shop. I worked at a...
Was this like having a sabbatical from the UK?
Basically, one of my mates moved out there with his parents. And then my best mate went out there and he's like, you got to come. It's unbelievable. I was like, okay. My plan was to do A-levels, go to uni, et cetera, et cetera. Go down that route. And I actually got kicked out of sixth form after my AS levels, which was year one. Kicked out. I was going to have to resit my exams from the first year, like held back a year because I failed my AS. Reason being, I started taking drugs that year. Yeah.
That, so it was like, help.
You know what I mean? It was like, they gave me a bit of freedom. I didn't have to show up to lessons. And it was just like, that's when the party really began for me. So anyway, my pal's like, you got to come to Australia. So I went over there, done a few little jobs, and a friend of mine had a little tiling company and I went and started working for him. And at the time, it was on the list. Australia used to have this list. I don't know if they've still got it, of like things that their country needs.
Yeah, like nurses, doctors.
There you go.
Construction
and
guys.
Tyler was on the list. So he's like, get into this. You'll be able to get your citizenship or apply for permanent residency. So I worked for him for a while, loved it. I say loved it. Good money. I was outside. I was in Australia.
Where were you, Sydney or Melbourne?
No, so it was Gold Coast near Surfers Paradise. Great for a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
I was having such a good time. But my visa ran out. So I came home and I did a course. It was like a 3-month tiling course. My mum and dad put me through it. And at the end of it, you got an MVQ level 2, which is what you needed to go back to Australia. And met a girl, stayed in England, didn't end up going back to Australia. But that's when my tiling career, I'm a wall and floor tiler by trade, that's when it started. And
can I ask you, why did you say wall and floor? Do people sometimes just do one or the other?
No. When you say tiler, some people confuse it with roof tiling.
Gotcha.
So I just say wall and floor tiler. Gotcha. That's at what it comes under the definition of the trade. Yeah. So yeah, that's when it started. And coincidentally, when I started making a bit more money through doing that, that's when the addiction and the drug use and everything else went in the same direction.
Was that because you had the funds? Or was it...
Yeah, yes and no. I feel like in the beginning, my drug use and my drinking was, I wouldn't say normal, because I always took it a little bit further than everybody else, but I was still partying. I was still out having fun.
Is this just like as a young guy, like
young
this
guy?
Is what we
I'm
do.
20.
We go out, we
I'm 20,
around.
21.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Essex, sugar up, faces up into town. We used to go to Coco. Do you remember Coco Club?
I've never been to Sugar Hut. I'm a bit older than you. I threw the towel in a long time ago.
Oh, this is it. We used to go to all these places, like Whiskey Mist. We used to go to all these places up West End. We loved it, right? Yeah. And it was like me and a group of my mates, good looking fellas, always looking for girls. Like they had a few quid. I had a few quid to keep up with at the weekend, but that's another story. I didn't have anything else in the middle of the week, so I spent it all on Saturday. But I was keeping up. It was fun. Yeah. It was manageable. I'm not one of these guys that sits there and say my using was all dark and horrible, because it wasn't. I had some great times.
Sounds good.
I had some great times. I had some great experiences. I traveled the world. We went on great holidays. We've done Vegas, Ibiza, Marbella. I've done that trip to, I ended up doing 2 years total in Australia. I've been around. I've done some stuff, right? Yeah. It wasn't all dark and sad. But slowly over time, and this is what I've learned with addiction, it's progressive, right? My life started becoming unmanageable. And it happened quickly, I remember.
Can you just explain for our listeners, what does that mean, unmanageable?
So what it meant for me, I remember the first time I ever used drugs. And when I say drugs, I mean my drug of choice, which was cocaine, at work, by myself, on my own. And I think that's why I picked the job that I picked, because I knew I could do it by myself. It was domestic settings, I'd be in people's houses doing their bathrooms, yeah?
Did you... This is just a question again for the audience. Did you consciously think, I can just do it at work? Or was it like, I'm tired today, I might have a little line?
I'll tell you where it was. I bought a bit and I was like, oh, well, I'll maybe sell a bit of this.
For those who are not watching, he just did the size of it.
That was like a I made bit. The size for about half an ounce. So I bought a bit and I was like, oh, I can maybe knock a bit of this out to my mates and then I'll get a free bit for the weekend. That's about the extent of my, I mean, I was no Pablo Escobar, put it that way. And
entrepreneurism.
Yeah, exactly. Truth of the matter was, I did it all myself. But so I had this bag around me. I was tiling a bathroom. I remember I was in Chelmsford, lovely lady's house. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to have one little bit. See, that'll be fine. So I did one bit. And then, if you know anything about cocaine, it's very Moorish. Mm. 45 minutes later, I did another bit. Then I did another bit. But I had convinced myself that I was only going to do just the one bit.
Yeah, which most people actually generally do.
Exactly, right? And it was the first time I realized that, oh, if I do one bit, I'm going to do more. Because I did it again a few days later. And it was like, oh no, I'm in this cycle now.
How was that first experience of doing it on the job? Did you get
intense,
paranoid and stuff?
Intense, or? Yeah, really intense. I did get paranoid, yeah. So this is the thing about me and my relationship with cocaine. I've got friends that have only got a look at it and their face starts going all over the place and they can't look you in the eye and stuff like that. For me, and this was both, a gift and a curse. I feel like it was the downfall of me, really. I could do it and I could keep a straight face. It sort of focused me into what I was doing.
Yeah.
It gave me everything I ever wanted. Like, I know now through doing work on myself and going through the 12 steps and finding out who I am and what it is that makes me tick and makes me who I am, I've always felt uncomfortable. By doing that, it takes me out of my head and I can function in the world. So it gave me everything that I couldn't do for myself.
Yeah.
And I was off and running. I was young. I think I was like 22 at this point. And it started to become normal. And I did it more and more.
Did people know about this, or was it just you doing it?
No, I was very secretive about the whole operation. But look, midweek, when I was doing this early doors, that was a secret. But then the weekend party, and we're still well out in the open.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because that's socially acceptable to a degree.
Yeah.
What happens with that is I start making mistakes. My organization skills were awful. I'd forget to order materials because I was out of my head. And then at this point, I'm still living with my parents. So I'm like wired at 4 o'clock. I've got to leave the job. I feel like I've just about got away with doing enough. The customer didn't suspect anything.
Was your actual craft still as good?
I don't think it suffered, no.
Yeah.
I don't think it suffered.
Yeah.
It's like OCD, straight lines. They actually, in a way, helped. I know I sweat a lot. Sweat a lot. Yeah. People were like, it's not even hot in here. And I'm sweating buckets. You know what I mean? But the thing that really did struggle, suffer was, like I said, about the organization.
Yeah, like the business side of it.
The business side of things. Yeah. Like actually doing the books or making sure that I've got the bits ordered that I need and going to pick stuff up, I'd forget. And another thing that was
that because you was just thinking of something else?
It's just because I was laser focused in what I was doing. I was so, whatever this is in front of me, I didn't have the capacity to be concentrating on the other things. People know that are in the trades that are running their own business. There is so many moving parts.
Yeah.
And things go wrong. Not just things go wrong, things out of your control go wrong. People don't show up. Materials are not in stock. It's like you have to be 5 steps ahead for things to run smoothly. And I wasn't. I was 1 step behind the whole time. And another thing, which is probably the main one, waking up on time. I was a nightmare.
Because you were so exhausted from the day before.
I'd stay up. What? So let me run you through a day. Wake up. If I got breakfast in me, it was going to be an okay day. If I started using before I'd eaten, bad. By 1 o'clock, I'm like, I've got no sustenance in me. Yeah. I was running out of energy. And then I would like switch drugs, smoke a joint, or eat a Valium to try and bring me down a little bit, go to McDonald's, stuff my face with a couple of cheeseburgers to give me a little bit of a boost. Mm. Back at it again. And then do the home bit, get I could do like 10 minutes around people and they wouldn't quite know what I was up to. And then I'd be in my bedroom, more PlayStation, vaping, staying up till 1 in the morning and then missing my alarm, blaming everybody else. Why didn't you wake me up when it's my fault? Repeat. And Paul, it was hell, mate.
It's hard to describe to people about you're not just taking cocaine, you're managing the whole game of taking cocaine. Mm. I don't mean game lightly. It's like, am I too high? Do people notice? Do I have to take something to go down? Then they go, it's like a chemistry test doing the whole thing, isn't it? wondering what they're doing.
It's constant.
Then the anger comes in, something goes wrong, it's definitely their fault.
Mm-hmm. I'm never my fault, victim mentality.
Yeah.
So there's a saying in fellowship I go to, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more.
Yeah.
Right? And then also exactly like you said, that alchemy. I'm too buzzing, come down a little bit. I'm too low, come up a little bit.
And whilst you're thinking of the chemistry test,
yeah,
you're not thinking of, I need to order more tiles, or I need to order
of course, I'm going to run out of a diesel in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm never thinking about them things.
Yeah.
All I am consumed by, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. And fundamentally, it comes down to, I am uncomfortable, sober. I need to put something in me to change the way I feel. And if I can get that balance just right, I'm okay for just now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's an illusion.
It is, but what's important about what you just said, and not many people think about that, because they always look at this from the outside as a dark subject.
Mm.
But actually, it's someone saying that I don't feel right, I'm trying to work this out myself by taking this substance to balance it out. It's kind of an innocent naivety initially that goes completely dark.
I'll be completely honest. I think without it, I may have taken my own life. I think it kept me alive long enough to find the rooms of recovery and the 12 steps because, and this gets me emotional thinking about it, I'm right on the edge here. I was so uncomfortable. I was so filled with fear, anxiety, just confusion. The world scared me to death. And once I found these substances, it made it okay for me to be in the world. I think if I'd never found it, I think I would have done something else, mate, because it was uncomfortable.
When you walked in today, you're a good-looking man. You're in fucking good shape.
Thank you.
Good outfit. And you walked in with such confidence, owned the room, let's do this. So when you say that, you'd never know. Yep. And it proves to me that when someone goes into sobriety and does what they're supposed to do, can thrive
change.
More than they've ever done before.
Change, mate. I now know that what I was looking for in drugs, I've now found in the 12 steps, spirituality, being of service, the 12 steps and the fellowship and all the work that you do around yourself does for me very slowly what a line of gear did for me instantly.
Mm.
That's what it is. I've replaced that with this. That was bad and negative and it made my life unmanageable. This is good, positive, and it allows me to be manageable in the world. Like, you know what I said about not showing up on time? I am the most punctual person, which is like, my mum, even when I was a kid, way before I put a substance, she couldn't get me out of bed in the morning to get me to school. She used to come in with a cup of water and flick water on my face.
Did you?
Wake up. You know what I mean?
Do you have an allergy to water?
Bad. You know what used to happen to me, right? This is mental. This popped up the other day when I was sharing. My alarm would go off or she'd nudge me in the morning. I'm one of three boys, middle brother. We're all really close in age and we're all really close as well. And she'd nudge me or my alarm would go off and I would wake up and I would fall back to sleep. And I'd be dreaming that I'd woken up, I was in the shower, I was getting ready, and I was like halfway through my morning routine of getting ready for school. And then I'd feel the water flicking on my face. I'd fallen back to sleep and convinced myself in the dream that I was awake. How mental is that? It comes to me the other day. And not just once or twice, Paul. This used to happen all the time. All the time. And then I'd wake up with the arm. Why didn't you get me up?
That's quite funny.
Yeah, mate.
What? How did, for you personally, come to the end of your journey with cocaine and stuff?
Okay. So I'm getting married next week.
Congratulations.
To a beautiful, beautiful person. Inside and out. We've got two lovely boys. I met her, it's going to be exactly, the day we're getting married, which is the 27th, I don't know when this is coming out. We met exactly 10 years before that, right? Pool party in Marbella, she's from Manchester. I'm from, obviously, Essex. I was on a stag do, she was on a hen do. We bumped into each other at a pool party. And this is towards the end. I'd already been to a meeting at this point.
Why did you go to that meeting?
Because I knew I needed to. A friend of mine's mum was in recovery and I knew she was in, I didn't know what a meeting was, but I knew that she knew something that I didn't know that I thought I needed to know.
Yeah.
So she took me to a meeting. I went to a CA meeting, which was the first one I ever went to. She passed away now, actually, last year. She died of cancer. Lovely lady. She's called Rachel. She changed my life. took me to a meeting, and I was like, oh, I need to be here. But I wasn't ready. I read the steps on the wall, and was talking about honesty, brutal honesty. And I just wasn't ready to share that. But now I know that there's a solution, but I'm not willing to do anything about it. So my using started getting a bit more isolated and a lot more secretive. When I met my missus at this pool party, she's from Manchester. She doesn't know anything about me, right? We fell for each other hard, fast, and it was real. Even though I was away with the fairies, I just knew it was real. She knew it was real. And I couldn't stop. Couldn't stop, mate.
Was this daily?
So we used to have a little party together, socially. And then I'd be secretly doing it midweek. And where it was sort of half accepted by her at the weekends, it was like licensed to do whatever I wanted, yeah? But the reason is, a lot of people around my area and my friends and that knew that I was like, no, it's probably best you don't do that anymore. This stag do was supposed to be like my last hurrah. So I told the boys, one more go, and I'm going to sort myself out when I get back. And because because my missus didn't know anything about me, it was like, go again. I ended up getting a flat in Ongar, and that's when my using really ramped up to a level that I wasn't used to. I got really skinny. I was losing weight. Our relationship wasn't toxic. It was just so one-sided because I couldn't be there for myself, let alone for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, she fell pregnant. And I'm like, that's it. Can't do it anymore. I am not going to be that dad. Right? And I don't come from a family like that. My mum and dad are still together. There's no addiction in my family. But I'd seen some instances of it before. And I'm like, fundamentally, I'm a good person, Paul. I know right from wrong. And I was like, I am not going to be that dad. And this is when I found out a thing or two about addiction. When my son was born, my firstborn son, I loved this boy. I'm trying to say this. Addiction's more powerful than love. And I couldn't stop using. And that's when I was like, fuck. Sorry to swear. Really need help. Really, really need help here. And I was getting a bit of counseling at the time, and she pointed me in the direction of NA, because I was like, I've been to the meetings, they don't work. I've heard it so many times from people that have never experienced how much it actually does work.
It's the same as people who go to the gym and sit at a coffee bar, walk around talking.
There you go.
And don't train, because the gyms do work if you
work. Yeah, of course they do. It's exactly what I was doing. I was going there, but I wasn't doing the work, and I wasn't really going there anyway. So I went to NA, and that's my fellowship. That's my home. I love all the fellowships. I attend them all, but NA is my...
Which is Narcotics Anonymous.
Narcotics Anonymous, yeah. What I love about NA, and I will get back to the point, is that they don't focus on a specific substance. They focus on the disease of addiction, which I've got, right? I can get this as anything. And there's evidence of that in my life. It's not about substances for me. It's about this head that I've got and trying to escape and lose myself in things that I can get obsessed with. So I went to NA. My son was 3 months old when I went to my first NA meeting. So it was like, I knew I had to do something for him, for her, for me. So I wanted to be the dad that I always wanted to be. The dad my dad was to me. You know what I mean? He was a good dad. And I got 100 days clean and picked up.
Do you know why you picked up?
So I'll tell you, I got clean on Bonfire Night, November the 5th, 2018. I picked up on Valentine's Day. Took my missus out for dinner. Done what couples do on Valentine's Day. Great evening. I was training hard at the time. Couldn't sleep. I was like, I'm going to pop to the gym, 24-hour gym. Half an hour through my workout, I am digging deep into my phone, looking for a number to pick up. It was like a zombie.
Unconsciously, it just happened.
And I got the number, sent the message, I left the gym, I drove to the lay-by, I picked up the gear, it's sitting there in front of me, I'm driving back, like, it was like an out-of-body experience. And I picked it up, I opened it up, I'd done a pinch of it, and I was like, fuck, why have you just done that, right? I ended up throwing half of it away So we don't do this anymore. Can't do this. You know where it takes you. And I didn't use the next day. I picked up the day after. And I used every day for 2 years.
Wow.
My clean date is November the 6th, 2020. And my original clean date was November the 5th, 2018. So I had 100 days off, and then I used every day for 2 years. And that last 2 years was hell on earth. I've got this little baby. I've got this missus who's uprooted her life to come down to start this family together. I'm promising her the world, and I meant it, because this is what I actually wanted.
Mm.
I wanted to give her everything. I wanted to be the best dad for this boy. And I was just like broken, mate. I was broken. I didn't know how to stop using. I was in and out of the meetings. I was lying, cheating, manipulating. When I say cheating, I don't mean cheating on my missus. I'm just like always an angle back to that, getting and using, finding ways and means to get more. And this is when, I know this is based around construction, this is when I'm working like a dog, because I need the money, because I've now got a habit that it was £100 a day. I used to buy an eighth, I'd pay 200 quid for it, and that would last me 2 days. Every second day I had to pick up another eighth.
Mm.
So paying for a house, having a child, cars, payments, bills, and an extra 700 quid a week on cocaine, plus I'm smoking 40 cigarettes and weed, Valium, all this, like you spoke about, that alchemy. My life was just purely unmanageable. I was 10 stone, dripping wet. I was...
Yeah, and you're tall. How tall are you?
6'4".
Yeah, so that's...
10 stone.
Yeah.
I was... I'll show you some photos, honestly, mate. It was just... It was awful. It was absolutely
And was the missus saying anything?
Of course she was. Yeah. Like, oh, man. I look back now, we spoke about this so much, you know what I mean? And we look back, and I look at photos of us in them days, and we've got this little beautiful boy, and I'm just dead behind the eyes. Mm. And she just looks sad. Like, and it's like, it really pains me. I've got so much shame and guilt around that stuff. I've been able to put it right to a certain degree. I've now been clean longer than I ever used in our relationship.
Mm.
Once it sort of went over that, it was like the real healing process started. And like, we talk about making amends, sitting down and apologizing for things that we're doing. But really, it's like the living amends, the ongoing amends. Mm. I don't behave like that anymore. I'm reliable today. We're jumping ahead. What finally made me stop, my missus would kick me out. I used to run in like 3 week cycles. I'd use cocaine every day for 3 weeks. By the end of that 21st day or whatever it was, I'm like, you can't keep doing that. Human beings can't keep doing that. And I would be like, and she'd be like, stay to you. You're pathetic. Get out of my house. And she'd kick me out.
Mm.
And I'd show up around my mum and dad's, two bin bags full of clothes. And they'd go, come. And they'd let me in. Back in my old bedroom, playing the PlayStation, sniffing the gear, vaping out the window. And I'd get myself to a point where I could manipulate a situation where I'd convince my missus that I was now clean again. She'd let me back in. I'd do it again.
It sounds so painful, mate.
It was exhausting.
Yeah, for everyone.
Exhausting. Just a drain. I was like a whirlwind for everybody's life. Draining. They talk about that ripple effect. You throw the stone into the pond, like, and it spreads out. Anyone who came near me, I would just sap the energy out of a room. And exactly like you just mentioned, when I come in, I bring energy to rooms today.
Mm.
I was, honestly, mate, it was exhausting. The one word I would describe, active addiction, the way I used, exhausting.
Yeah.
And obviously, like I mentioned, I'm working, and then I've got to go and do another job.
How were you at work at that point? Because it sounds how did you get work at that
mate,
point?
Mate, honestly, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Because people needed a job
manipulating.
Done.
I'll tell you a situation of the unmanageability. I was working for a company in Loughton. They were like a bathroom company, and I was like subcontracting from them. And then I was doing my own jobs as well. I'd run out of money. I needed to pick up. I went to the builder's merchants that this company uses, ordered the material that I needed for my private job on their account so that I could then go to the guy, oh, I've just bought these materials. Give me the cash, because I had to go and pick up. Because otherwise, I knew if I didn't get the gear in me, I wouldn't be able to finish the job, because I was like fading. As soon as I walk out of the builder's merchants, I get a call from the governor of the firm. Mate, what are you doing? I'm like, make up some bollocks. You know what I mean? Like, I'm robbing the builders merchants in the name of the company I work for so that I can go and get drugs to finish the job that I'm on, which is my private.
Yeah.
Like, just mental and thinking I'm going to get away with that stuff. And then when I get caught red-handed, trying to lie my way out of it. You know what I mean? Funny enough, it was one of the first amends I made. Went back and put that right. Because it was like a low stakes amends. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. They gave me a job back. Ended up working for them once I was clean. Because I was honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, last time I used, it was another one of them situations. My missus kicked me out, went around my mum and dad's, and they said, you're not coming in. Can't do it anymore. And they'd done a little bit of research and they realized that by letting me in, they was enabling me to keep using. They didn't know what the word enabling meant.
Which is difficult because as a parent, that's what you'd naturally do.
They said it's the hardest thing they've ever done.
Yeah,
they didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what I was going to do. If any, what it did for me was solidified the fact that I had no wiggle room. I had nowhere else to go. Game was up. Homeless.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I'd never been in that situation before. My brother took me in, my older brother, for one night. He was out one night. Because I'm breaking his mum and dad's heart. My little brother wanted nothing to do with me at this point. He's a lot more stubborn than my older brother. Mm. Couldn't stand me. My missus couldn't stand me. My parents were just like heartbroken. My brother let me stay with him for one night. I went back to my parents the day after and they was like, call that fella you know from that rehab. We've been waiting for this. We've only got money for one go. Don't mess this up.
Wow.
And that's what I did. A week later, I was in treatment, a place called The Lighthouse in Shrewsbury Ness.
That was kind of him.
Oh, mate. Saved my life.
Yeah.
Saved my life. I knew I needed it, right? What had been happening for me is I'd been getting small periods of clean time, but nothing else had changed in my life. I'm still going to jobs. Bearing in mind, when I'm going on these tiling jobs, I've got an offcut of tile sitting in the corner with 10 lines racked up on it and a tenner stuffed underneath it. You've got wet hands when you're tiling.
Yeah.
So I can't touch it. So it's all pre-organized. And every 45 minutes or half an hour, I'm having a light. It was like clockwork.
Yeah.
So get me 3 or 4 days clean. I'm back on the site, but there's no tile over there with the lines on. And I'm trying to do the same stuff. It was like trigger after trigger after trigger.
Yeah.
I needed a break from everything. I needed to just concentrate on my recovery. I'd got to a point where I was so consumed by this addiction. I'm talking like, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, completely, yeah. Hi, it's Paul here. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and to say if you've heard something on the show that's moved you, please follow, rate or review the show and it'd be amazing if you could share it. Now back to the show. I think you said it earlier, it's hard to describe. It's so much more powerful than love.
Yeah.
It's so much more powerful than money, than anything.
Mm.
Because the brain would go, well, I've got a child, or I've got a wife, or I've got this job coming up. I'm going to do my best. And this thing just takes you over.
It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're going to go and get a big bag of gear, mate. And we're going to isolate. Gets me right where I want me. So yeah, the fact that I got into this treatment center and it was like, pause. The obsession to use came off me so quickly.
Did it?
It came off me really quickly. And I was skeptical because I had so much evidence that it was going to come back. That obsession to use drugs was going to come back. And it was like, I'd heard people say it before, when you're ready to stop, you're ready to stop. Right? And before that, it's really difficult to stop because you're not ready.
Well, right? You're wrestling, aren't you? If you know you should, but you can't.
Exactly. I surrendered. Couldn't do it anymore. That look, I sat down by the seafront with my mum and dad. They dropped me off at this treatment center. We was about an hour early. My dad's always early to everything. He was like, we'll pull up here. The waves are lapping up. The tide was all the way in. And I'm sitting there in between my parents. And just the looks on their faces, like, they was at the end of their tether. It was like, they were heartbroken.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, fuck. He's like, please, please, please get this right. And I think for the first time in my life, I really took that on board and was like, you know what, I'm going to really try. And what was the difference between this time and any other time that I tried getting clean was honesty. I opened up. I'd suffered some abuse when I was a kid. I didn't really know it was abuse from a family member of a family friend, yeah? And it was like a really confusing situation for me, yeah? I don't want to go into too many details. I spoke about it on my podcast. Mm. But the thing that confused me the most, right, is it felt good. Physically felt good. What I took away from it was, I'm sure people can put two and two together, it was like, don't tell anyone about this. And I just like closed up and I internalized everything. And that was part of the pain and the baggage that I was carrying. When I got to treatment, the first thing they make you do is write your life story. And I wrote all that stuff down. Mm. And then in one of the group sessions, there was about 10 or 11 other people in there. I stood up at the front, I read it out. And I told everybody all that dark, you know, like my stuff. No one's having that. I'm going to die with these secrets. I let it all go. It's like a bit like the process of doing a step 4 and 5, making that moral inventory, telling someone about
what it. What gave you the courage to do that? Because I have the same, I have a similar story. Mm. And I remember we did a thing called psychodrama. And me personally, I was like, I don't want to be an addict. I don't want this stuff in my body. I don't want anything. And I realized after a while of being in there that I need to tell the truth. And this, bless her, the woman, we were sitting like this. We did a psychodrama, right? To sit in that chair, be that person, and sit in this chair, be this person. Mm. And I couldn't speak. I literally was like stuttering. Like, and she said, just stamp on the floor and get the energy going. I woke up a few minutes later, I'd smashed all the room up.
Yeah.
I didn't break my hands, but they called NAMS. She looked like I broke my hands because I was punching the floor. I had a complete blackout.
Really?
Yeah, completely.
That rage.
I don't even know what happened.
Primal.
Yeah, it was so painful for me. Mm. And it had been there for a long time that I couldn't verbalize it.
Mm.
And then I was allowed to scream it out and then shout it until I could talk about it.
Yeah.
But they changed it because really what she'd done was not. A little bit dangerous.
Yeah, okay.
And she probably didn't realise how much it had affected me.
Mm.
But what gave you the courage to say?
I'll tell you what gave me the courage. I was in pain, right? The addict fundamentally is self-centred, yeah? How I feel is the most important thing. That's why I use the drugs I used and the combinations of drugs that I used at the times that I used them. I was trying to augment the way I felt.
Mm.
It had been bad enough for my parents. It had been bad enough for my missus, for my brothers, my friends, everyone else for a long time. When it got bad enough for me, when I was in enough pain, then I was willing to change. And if they told me that getting honest in a room full of people and saying all that stuff is the solution to you not feeling like this anymore, I was willing to do anything. And I got honest.
Yeah.
I let it all out. I had like a breakdown of my ego. I had this huge ego with like crippling self-consciousness and anxiety paired together.
Yeah.
And everything I put out into the world wasn't real. It was like a simulated version of what I thought you wanted me to be.
Well, it's like a defense system.
Yeah.
Keeps you away enough so you don't see inside
and
me.
And it worked to a certain degree because I could handle myself in certain situations, but I was always acting. Always acting, I dropped that guard, took the masks off, and I started to believe to a certain degree that I was enough just as I am. Because people have been telling me my whole life, you're really good and you're good at this. Mm. And it was like, no, I'm not. I'm a piece of shit. And I'm not good at that. And I'm going to fail. So I'm not even going to try anyway. And it was like, slowly but surely, over the last 5.5 years, I've real evidence based person. Yeah. I started doing good things and being reliable, being manageable, helping others, paying bills on time. That look of disgust on my missus' face turned into a look of pride when I walked into a room. And started to believe it, mate. I start to believe it. And you know what? Funny enough, I mentioned this the other day. It's got to a point now where I'm sort of, I haven't moved away from the construction industry, but my role has turned into, I do this for a living now. I talk into a microphone. I've got two podcasts and I'm on a radio station, Fix Radio, which is a construction, it's a radio station for the trades.
Yeah.
And
in what way?
It's basically the best radio station you can have on while you're at work.
Really?
That's the whole premise behind it. Yeah. So all the ads are tailored towards the trades.
Okay.
It's a load of geezers talking about geezer stuff and playing songs that we think everyone's going to like. You know what I mean? That's the premise behind it. And you know what? It's really good. It's nationwide on DAB. Yeah, they're doing great numbers, really good numbers. And we did a drive time show, 3 till 6, me and Josh James, comedian, friend of mine.
So, do you know what I said, just quickly, we had someone on the other day that was saying when they was on a site, it was a big site, they weren't allowed to have radio.
Nah, radio is, look, first thing you do when you get to a job, get that radio on. First thing you do, it's the centerpiece.
It sounded like a very clinical place though, they weren't allowed to have
that. So our health and safety's gone mad. And look, there's a lot less injuries on jobs these days, so it obviously works to a certain degree. I think at some points, common sense should prevail over the rule book, but I'm not the person who's got to pay the insurance bill if someone hurts himself, am I?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So only recently, I was talking about believing in myself and actually thinking I can do this stuff. I started working at this radio station 6 months ago, and there's producers that have been in the radio industry for 20 years and have been all around, worked at some real big stations, and are now over at this station I'm at, because it's like, it's a great place to work, and they're going like that. And they're like, I've never seen anyone hit the ground running like you have. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, gets me emotional. Because I've spent 35 years not believing in myself. Mm. And they're like, Chris, you can do this. You're good at it. And fucking hell, a lot of tears today, man.
Good for you, mate.
This stuff gets me right in here. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know what? You're all right, mate. You can do this stuff. Mm. You can provide for your family doing something you love. And the feedback I've got and the numbers I'm doing on the podcast and the amount of people that have signed up to our Patreon and are like, they're proving how much they want to listen to me because they're paying their money. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying this from like an egotistical point of view where I'm like bragging, look how good I am. It's like, oh my God, I can actually, I'm all right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, that's that destruction of the ego. You can see the way I react to that stuff. I'm not like, look at me, I'm bollocks.
You're alive. You're thriving, you're alive.
I can do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like a relief.
Yeah.
It's a relief. Yeah. So from that person that was in that bathroom with them 10 lions racked up on the side, isolated, don't look at me. Customer walks in the door and I'm like, do you want a cup of tea? Yes, please. And I'll forget the tea's there and it's gone stone cold because I've been over here. Mm. I used to freeze on jobs, right? I'd forget to breathe. I'd be like this. I'd plant my feet and I'd be reaching over here to get something. And then the thing I need to do is over there. Couldn't move my feet. I'm like leaning. And I'm like, just take a step. You know, like a baby.
Yeah, I do.
Where a baby's trying to get something that's just out of his reach. He doesn't realize, if you take another step, it'll be easier to get.
Yeah.
It was like I grew backwards and I just didn't know how to do anything. It's like all the fundamentals and basics that I'd learned went out the window when I was that deep in drug use. I don't want to say addiction because I'm still in addiction. I'm in recovery from addiction.
Yeah.
But deep in that drug use, it was like base level existence.
Do you still see stuff, say in the last year or two, on sites where other people are in that situation?
I think fundamentally, right, what it comes down to with why there's so much addiction and mental health, men's mental health on building sites, it's a laddie culture, right? I know from going to the meetings that one of the most manly things you can do is get vulnerable in front of another man.
Yeah.
But society doesn't view it that way. I think it's getting better.
Not yet.
I think it's getting better.
Yeah.
Definitely is. But it's like when you walk into a building site, you're tough, you show no fear, you show no emotion.
Mm.
You take the piss out of each other. And then on Friday, you go for beers after work. And I used to do it all the time. And you know what? I loved it. That first beer on a Friday after work goes down really nice. Our day, our week's graft. Yeah. I have the second one. I call it on. Mm. I have the third one. Now I can't drive. I'm still in my dirty work clothes. Saturday morning, 6 a.m., I'm still in my dirty work clothes. I've done 2 grams, drunk 15 pints, can't drive my car home, spoiled the weekend. Because I've overdone it every single time. There's a certain culture around being on a building site that's like, geezer, laddie, beers. Some people can handle it, some people can't.
Do you think it's, Shannon, our producer, said this the other day as a question. She asked me, do you think that people go into the industry because they're that character, or they kind of become that character because you feel like you have to?
I think there's a bit of both, right? One thing about the construction industry is you can start with no qualifications, zero. All you need is a pair of work boots and a high vis. Mm. You can get onto a building site and then you can work your way up from there.
Yeah.
Or stay there, depending on how hard you are or how applicable your skill set is to what you're going to do. You know what I mean? It comes down to ambition, but fundamentally it comes down to, it's a lot of talented people on building sites.
I was going to say, this is the thing that gets sort of mowed over all the time. When I worked on sites, there was some incredible carpentry work.
Mate.
Unbelievable, like...
craftsmen.
Yeah. And that's a talent. That's a...
Of course there are. Yeah. Some people pick it up quicker than others. I always turn my hand to things quickly, which is another one of these things where, like, fucking evidence of me being good at something and not believing that I'm good at it.
Mm.
I did that tiling course. The guy who run the school said to me, who are you working for? He thought I was a spy from another tiling school.
Did he?
He's like, you've done this before. I'm like, I ain't.
Yeah.
Like, picked it up quick. That's like skill and talent to a certain degree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You pick it up, you're interested in it, you want to learn more, and you keep going, you keep going. There's a reason some people are like real successful in the construction industry, and there's a reason others are not.
Yeah.
It comes down to skill, talent, and are you applying yourself to the thing? It's like the going to the gym and not working out. Are you putting in the effort? You get out what you put in. So,
but also there's a way the brain works to see shapes, sizes, and understand patterns and forms and how you construct something.
It's creative as well.
Yeah, because if you picture it and then all of a sudden you can do it, that's pretty
of course
incredible.
It is. And this is one of the biggest things that I always struggled with clients is I could see it. And I'm like, you see, can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is what I used to say to them. And they'd be like, it's different now with AI because I just go, ChatGPT, do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and now you can show people like a 3D rendering.
Mm.
Back in the day, some clients would get it, some clients wouldn't. And that's how different types of brains work. I've got a creative brain.
Yeah.
Some people haven't. What I will say is going back to the fact that anyone can get onto that building site, it's like there's a guy I know, he's got this sketch. It's like the 30-year-old labourer. Yeah. And it's like that guy, he's got addiction running through it. Can you lend me a tenner, mate, to get to it? And it's just like they just bumble through life, trying to pinch a pound note here, pinch
day
a pound
day,
note
day
there,
to day.
And like not accepting the fact that, mate, this there might be something going on here. And I know, and you know, that there's a solution to that problem.
Mm.
Are you willing to do anything about it? And that's what it comes down to. It's the fundamental things. When you said to me, what made it different for you? What changed you? I was in enough pain that I was willing to change. Unfortunately, some people don't ever get to that point.
Do you... On the radio station, for example, is there any helplines? Is there anything that's put out on construction sites where on the wall is like, if you have a problem, maybe you should go and get help?
So there's a charity, Max, my co-host on Addicts to Recovery, we was on here previously, the Lighthouse Charity.
Got it.
Right? So it's all around construction, all around mental health and touches on addiction. Definitely, it's getting spoken about more, and it's definitely the radio show. So one thing I won't advertise on the radio show, and this whole thing's funded by advertisement, no gambling, no alcohol.
Yeah.
And there's big money in gambling and alcohol adverts. They've turned that down because their morals are more important than the pound note that you get from...
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Says a lot.
One of the big betting companies, I won't say their name, offered to sponsor our show, and they was offering 7 figures for the year. to sponsor our show. Mm. And it got turned down for a van insurance company because it lined up morally. So it's like, they're not after a quick pound note. They're after doing the right thing and knowing that addiction, mental health on building sites is massive. Suicide in the trades is enormous.
Yeah.
Enormous. And like, I've been on the receiving end of it. Two people I know in the past, I'd say over the past 3 years, took their own lives. It's such a big deal right now. I can't.
And it's such a shame because most of the men on there are good, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them are talented. Most of them just trying to feed their families or get on a ladder for themselves.
Yeah.
Partly culturally, partly I don't think the media helps as well. And this has been going on for a long time, that men are supposed to be men. And if you're in the trade, you're this kind of guy and stuff. And my experience when I was working it, and some people I know now that work in the trades, like there's a guy that does the work at our house when he comes in, mate, he's the same as you. He's really lean, really lovely fella. Has a salad for lunchtime, super fit, unbelievably clean, never smoked in his life. And I'm like, people don't picture a tradesman like that.
Of course. I had it recently. I went to a job and this lady said to her husband, and she told me, she was like, he doesn't look like a tailor.
Did you say, would you mind me, what does a tailor look like?
I was like, well, technically I'm a podcaster as well. She's like, that makes more sense. But yeah, you got this image, right?
Yeah.
Of what it is, what a tradesperson is. And like, it's all sorts. All sorts make up the building industry. Mm. Of course they do. It's, this is another thing I wanted to say. Since I've been a little bit more public about my situation and the things that I've overcome, and then I've got a little bit of a profile, for lack of a better word, well, I get recognised.
Yeah, no, that's what it is, yeah.
I get recognised from time to time. I love it, by the way. I absolutely love it when I get recognised. Makes my day. Because it comes back to that stuff, like, oh my God,
but you're getting recognised for the right thing.
There you go. I'm like, that's people are interested in what I'm doing, and it gives me a boost, and I want to do it again.
But not only that, let me just tell you this, because I've been in that situation and been recognised a lot and stuff. If you're being recognised for what you do now, I believe it's different from ego. I believe it lifts the spirit because you know you're being recognized for the right thing.
Yeah.
And that person is listening to you for help or continued help.
Yeah.
And they're saying it. I won't mention anything, but I was in a financial building a little while ago and a guy came in with a suit and he said, can I just say hi, Paul? And I was like, yeah, sure. He said, on the quiet, I listened to your podcast. It's really helped me. And I've been sober for quite some time now.
Nice.
And I was like, it made me really well up.
Of course it does, mate. I was like, it's doing what it's supposed to do.
There you go.
It's doing what it's supposed to do. Yeah. And it brings me on to my next point. This is what I was going with it. I'll be on a building site. People come up to me and they're like, seen your podcast. By the way, can I have a chat with you a little bit later? Away from everyone. Mate, I'm really struggling. What can I do? And I'm like, get yourself to a meeting. It's my advice to everybody. Anyone who's struggling, who's got what I suffer with, addiction, the disease of addiction. There are other solutions. The only thing that's ever worked for me is 12-step fellowship. Get in there, get honest, find that connection, find your people. This is what I like to say. Addiction for me is isolation. And the opposite to addiction is connection. Connection to a higher power, connection to other people. It's like this power that's working in my life works through people. If I'm isolated, I'm cut off from the power.
Mm.
So it's like, whether it's my family or my friends or the people in the fellowship, you know what I mean? People like yourself, people like Max, we've come together through, first time I met you was in a meeting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We got each other's number. 2 years later, here we are sitting down having a chat and we've stayed in contact. You're my people, I'm your people.
Yeah.
It's all about that connection. So.
Well, it's a winner's game now.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
But being on that building site where you can't mention this stuff because you feel like you're too much of a geezer to talk about it, that's isolation. And the addict in your head loves that isolation.
It's got the reality right where you is what you said earlier. Now, when I see vulnerability in a man, I'm like, fuck me, he's done some work on himself.
He's brave.
And he's strong.
Yeah.
And he has courage.
Mm.
You know, and it's the same for me. When I get emotional, I was holding him just about while he was talking.
Yeah.
But I feel it. And I recognize it as a winner.
Mm.
I recognize it as a strength, not fucking weakness.
Of course it is, mate. You know? I've sat in meetings and there's a guy, big, burly geezer, covered in tattoos. You could tell he was an handful back in the day. And he's getting real vulnerable, talking about his truths and how much fear he was in when he was acting out on them defects of character, when he was doing whatever it is that he was doing. And I'm like, powerful, powerful stuff.
Mm.
Rather than the guy out there in society pretending, I can spot him a mile away, mate.
Yeah, easy, yeah.
You know these blokes that are like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, you must be terrified.
Bless you, yeah.
You must be absolutely terrified. I just want to give him a cuddle. It's going to be all right, mate.
Yeah, I've actually done it to someone.
Yeah.
My wife looked at me and thought I was nuts.
Mm.
When someone was like that, I gave him a cuddle and he burst out crying.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's going to be all right, mate. You're
there
okay.
There you go.
Not because I'm a tough guy, because I've been through it. I've seen that.
Mm.
And just want to say, on vulnerability, it doesn't mean that you're open all the time and you're falling apart and things make you... It means that you're in touch with the strength of yourself and you can go to town if you need to.
Yeah.
You look after yourself and your family, you know, whatever. But it means you're wholesome because you have the ability to feel and be in that place and hold that space, but also you can hold other different types of spaces as well, right?
Of course. And this is exactly it, right? Mind, body, spirit.
Mm.
I feel like physicality for me, exercise, whether it be lifting weights or like I'm doing at the minute, I'm on this boxing journey. I've got a fight in July.
That's another conversation.
July 18th, I'm having my first boxing match. And this is what it is, right? I was taking my boy to this boxing class. You know the guy who's my trainer, Rod. Yeah. Shout out RJ's gym.
Yeah, he's great, Rod. I know.
Lovely stuff. Ago. Good mates of my cousin. I've known him for years. Funny enough, I used on a tiling job I did for him as well. When I tiled his gym, done the changing rooms, you know what I mean? Comes back full circle. My son, 7 years old, I was taking him to this boxing class. They don't punch each other. They're just learning how to hold their hands up and hit the bag. Bit of fitness for him. He loves it. And one of the trainers is sitting there. This is how I know I'm an addict, right? One of the trainers is sitting there, not doing anything. I'm sitting there, not doing anything while my boy is training. I've never hit the pads, never hit the bag in my life. I'm like, chuck the pads on. Let's have a little go. Me and you, trainer, young kid, 22. I've hit the pads for 30 seconds. I was like, I really like that. Can you train me? And he's like, no problem at all. At this point, I'd been lifting weights and I was starting to stagnate a little bit. I was getting bored of it.
Mm.
Three sets of 10. You know what I mean? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, same thing. I needed a challenge. So I'm hitting the pads, having a go with him. And he's like, you want to have a fight? And I'm like, when? He goes, 6 months from novice to next month. I'm like, why not? I'd been training boxing for a week. I signed up for a fight. I'm all in.
Yeah.
If I'm doing something, I'm all in. That's the addict. I don't want to say obsession because it's not taking over my life.
I'm gonna disagree in the sense of,
okay,
sure, it's addiction, but also you're young, right?
Sort of.
You are young, 20 years younger than me. Why would you not take that opportunity to build in another skill with discipline? It's hard work.
Yeah.
If you haven't boxed, it's hard work. It's incredible for fitness, discipline, and actually cognitively, this can sound weird, it helps with the left-right brain connection because you're using all your body and everything to coordinate. That's a lot.
So like a game of chess in there, mate. But there's fists coming at you.
It is.
All right. I'll tell you what it is. When I first jumped in, I was hitting the pad. I was awful. Awful. My cousin, he's been boxing for 30 years. Loves it. He's had a few fights himself. He just loves boxing.
Hmm.
Lives and breathes it. I went and hit the pads with him. After I told him I was having a fight, he's like, oh, I need to see what you're doing here. Because, you know what I mean? I don't know if this is a good idea.
Yeah.
I've hit the pads with him. And he was like, pathetic. You got loads of work to do. So I was bad, really bad. This morning, I sparred 4 2-minute rounds with a guy who's in right good shape, can hold his hands up, and I come out of there this morning, and if it was a fight, I won the fight.
Mm.
I've got better at it. And it's like the stakes are higher, and punches are coming at you. And I've gone from doing all this, sorry for the audio listeners, like flailing, yeah. like pouring away, to now, when the punches are coming at me, I'm calm. I'm blocking them and I'm shelling up how I'm supposed to. And if they do hit me, it's like, all right then. And then I fire one back. I'm boxing now. Mm. So it's like, you can do anything. And I've proved it in 6 months. I've gone from a complete novice that when a punch come flying at me, I was terrified, to now I'll jump in and have a go. You know what I mean? And on July 18th, we'll see what happens.
I hope it's on
film. But it's another skill I've picked up, and it's another challenge. I feel like this is what I need in my addiction. It's like, I need a goal. I need a challenge. Mm. I need something I can work towards. So I know you've heard of this, delayed gratification. Cocaine is instant gratification. And I don't think there's any other substance on the planet, maybe crack cocaine, that does it quicker than that. You do it, you feel that dopamine rush immediately. So when I come in and started working on myself and being in recovery, I needed to teach myself delayed gratification. You put the work in now, you get the payoff later.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of cocaine.
And I'm going to tell you the same thing. That's not addiction. That's life.
There you go.
That's life skills. And that's a mindset to have to build something slowly without the instant gratification. Chris.
Yeah.
We're out of time, mate.
Are we really?
Yeah.
I could do another hour.
Me too. It's been amazing, mate. Thank you,
mate.
So much.
I really appreciate you having me back on.
This is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation UK, which educates the public about addiction, recovery, and the wealth of surrounding issues. We use lived experience and evidence-based science to support those in recovery and those struggling with addiction. To find out more about what we do, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com. You can also donate. Please donate. It really, really helps us to put this on for you guys. It will help us to break the stigma of addiction. It will also help us to educate more of the population, and it will allow us to bring you more episodes. Thank you. See you next time.